This is the July 27 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Merrill Crowley. He's at AgTraderTalk.com out of Watseka, Illinois. Chip Nellinger is here from Blue Reef Agri-Marketing in Morton, Illinois. And Sherman Nolan joins us from Risk Management Commodities. He's in Hudsonville, Illinois. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org, or search us out by name in your favorite podcast application. Sherman Nolan, I'm going to start with you at Risk Management Commodities. You're a farmer there in Hudsonville, Illinois. You're not too awfully far from Terre Haute, Indiana. I think that's the easiest way for people to locate where you are on the Illinois side of that border. What do conditions look like for your crops today?
I mean, they're not bad. Like we were talking earlier, we caught a lot of rain the very first part of July, up to 9 inches. So we were, you know, really lucky. I mean, a lot of it soaked in, but some of it ran off. But since then, we really haven't had a whole lot of rain. I mean, the crops were really dry in June. So the rain came at a perfect time. I mean, because that was probably one of the driest Junes I've seen since 2012. But we got that rain, and then the crops, I think corn grew a foot to 2 feet really fast. And, you know, it really helped the beans out. We got some size to our beans as well now. But the corn, you know, conditions are good, but we're going backwards here, you know, pretty fast with this heat, because we really haven't had much rain, you know, for several weeks now. But this heat is really starting to take a toll on us. Potential is there. It's still there if we could, you know, get some rain, you know, here the first part of August. I mean, if these weather guys are hopefully right with their cooler, wetter type, you know, forecast, it's exactly what we need if it comes to fruition. But this heat right now is really putting some stress on these crops.
We move 2.5-3 hours north of you to Watseka. I don't think it's quite 3, but maybe 2.5 hours north of you to Merrill Crowley. Merrill, what are conditions like along the Indiana-Illinois border where you are?
They look pretty good. I almost have to agree with what Sherman says about where it's at down there. You know, I wouldn't give you hardly anything for what they were middle of June, but this rain came along. It's kind of, and corn grew, pollinated. Things look really good. It surprises me to see the condition report where it's at this present time. But yeah, I think we need some finishing rain, just like, you know, Sherman was saying. We got to have that rain to finish it off. And if we get it, then I think we'll have a pretty good crop. If we don't, then prices need to go higher.
Chip Nellinger, does it play in Peoria? You're along the Illinois River there in Morton.
Yeah, really good, Todd. Thinking about this earlier today, if you, it's really hard to wrap your mind around if you looked at this crop in late May and all the way through June, as dry as we were. This arguably around this area within a 60-mile radius was probably as dry or drier than just about anywhere in the country. And so it's hard for your mind to get around that fact as you drive out right now, because it looks really, really good. Now, it's near 100 today. It's supposed to be 102 tomorrow. We're going to need more rain fairly soon, within the next week to 10 days, or we will start taking the top end of this off, I think. But for where we've been, this crop, corn and beans both, look pretty darn good to me at this stage of the game. But we're only about two-thirds to the finish line. August, I think, is going to be really important from a weather, precip, and temperature standpoint.
Next week, the month of August will begin, and USDA's first crop production report is due out. We've now had a few years under our belt where USDA has not taken hard numbers, meaning they don't go into the field to capture numbers, and they are surveying producers now. What do you suppose, Chip, farmers will tell them about the size of the crop that they have in the field?
Yeah, that's always the question, Todd, on the surveys, right? And I'd love to know the answer to that. You know, I think that the USDA in years past has struggled with getting maybe accurate or enough information on the surveys. You know, this August report always is, a little bit of a question, because people have a tendency to look ahead and say, Well, on the September report, they'll actually head out into the fields and do the ear counts and weigh ears and weigh pods, and that will be much more objective. So, you know, again, I think it's a real wild card on this August number. The crop conditions are going to be part of that. The weather is going to be part of that. And obviously the surveys are going to be part of that. And in my mind, it leaves a door open for some potential shocks to what the market expects.
I'll turn to you, Sherman. Do you think when you go into your fields and you assess, for instance, today, what you thought your crop might make by the time we get to the fall, how off the potential are you, or how do you think about it? What kind of number do you offer up?
Well, obviously, I take ear counts, and you know, I count the kernels on everything. And but again, I take in consideration, you know, how much moisture we've had, kind of the weather, you know, hopefully the outlook going forward, you know, and knowing, you know, how much more it's going to take to finish this crop off. I mean, so that's kind of really where you have to start, though, is your ear count and how many kernels you have, you know, to get a base number. I mean, if the ear determination was, you know, went well early on, then that ear is set. But you also have to consider, you know, how much does that ear lose on length? How much depth do you get to the grain? You know, so when you're doing those yield calculations, you know, do you divide that by, you know, 80,000 kernels, 70,000, 100,000, you know, if it's really tiny grains. So the weather going forward will be a huge factor. You know, we can lose this crop, you know, in August. We've done it before, and, you know, we'll just have to wait and see. But like everybody's saying, the crop has looked really well for no more, you know, rain than we've had. But I think, you know, you go back and look at June, I mean, we had some really cool temps. That's really what saved us. We were really dry, but the temperatures weren't overly hot. And, you know, that's really kind of what saved us then.
So what would you use today? Do you use as a default, just a normal year? What are you dividing by, 80,000 or something higher than?
I usually use 80 to start with, 80 to 85 maybe to start with, till I start to see how, you know, how the ears progress and how they grain, you know, what kind of size and weight will we end up having.
And so 80 to 85. So I've got some rough calculations. These are from a couple of years ago that Emerson Nafziger gave me. He uses a default, or at the time, a default number of 80,000, 85,000, if it looked rough. He says that's a conservative estimate. Could be used when conditions seem far less than optimum. I don't know whether you would consider today far less than optimum or not. Maybe not. And if things were bad, which also has a definition, bad should be used when firing has occurred well up the stalk and leaf area is constrained. I don't think there's anything in that, or maybe there are some, but not much, certainly in Illinois. And he'd use 90K on that. So I'm just trying to get an idea. You know, you get the number, and then there is still some fudge factor within that once you have the hard numbers, yeah. The objective numbers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so
right.
You're using 80 to...
Because those can project to be really high. And you look at that, you're like, okay, it's not going to be that high. You know, so you just say, okay, take at least 10% off of that, maybe, you know, or something like that, to get a more realistic number by the time the combine gets there.
How many producers do you think actually get into the field and do yield estimates this early?
You know, it's surprising... very few, in my opinion, the ones I talked to. And maybe I don't talk to all the right ones, but some of them are like, yeah, I haven't. I don't want to know. You know, like, that's totally different than me. I want to know.
Right.
You know, what I've got out there.
Tip, do you have a difficult time getting these kinds of numbers from producers so that you can help them market?
Yeah, I think less than half do for various reasons. Maybe they don't want to know. You know, it's not very fun. I don't want to go out there in the middle of a cornfield in August when it's a 110 degree heat index either. So, you know, there's some valid reasons for that. But I think the minority do. And I think that, you know, this question really is going to be about August weather. And, you know, I was on a podcast earlier today and we were talking offline, and you know, you're hearing, you know, you will hear tip back. Yeah, it's good, but tip back. Well, you know, that's kind of a vague term as well. And sometimes there's tip back depending on what population you plant. But I really think the stress that we've put this through in May and June, and then we got good rains and cool temperatures in July, you really could be talking about 20 to 30 bushels difference potentially, depending on how August weather plays out, especially with this heat snap that we're going through right now. You know, it's, I guess if we get rain 6 days down the road and it's cooler, that probably, you know, goes a long way towards fixing things up. But, you know, if it's 2.5-3 weeks and still 90 degrees and we don't get much rain after this, I just don't see any way that we're not going to pull the yields, the top end yields back a little bit. So I think August weather is always important, but I think with the stress that you put this market or this crop through in May and June, and then gave it ample rain and cool temps in July, that, you know, we can't, you know, overemphasize how important, at least in my mind, the next 4 or 5 weeks of weather is.
Merrill, I've got a series of questions here for you. The first one is about pulling the top end back on this. USDA went from the trend line, which was 181.5, that it used in May to July, where it dropped it back by 4 bushels to the acre to 177.5. Do you think, just offhand, is that still a good number for the United States, or was it a good number at the time even?
Well, the USDA tends to drag their feet on making adjustments, which, you know, because you don't know what the weather is, just like we've all been talking about here. How's it going to finish out? I guess from what I'm seeing, some of these guys that do yields off condition report, and then Cordonnet, he came out the other day with 174. Again, it's early. It's difficult to tell what that crop is going to do. My thinking is the 177 is still pretty high. It would be one of the best crops we ever had, and we certainly haven't had the best weather that we've seen. I keep referring back to some of my guys to 1989. That year was very dry going into July, very similar to what 88 had been, but we started getting the rains in July, and once the stuff got pollinated, it's pretty hard to back it off too much or add too much to it. But, you know, 20, 30 bushels is a lot when you're talking about the acreage we have right now. So even if we had the 173.3 that we had last year, you got to add another 7.1 million acres more, and that's going to be 1.24 billion bushels. So, you know, that's a big difference right there itself. Everybody's looking at the yield right now, but, you know, we got a lot more acres to deal with. So I don't remember exactly what year it was. But we all were just dead certain of what the condition report was and how it was going to come out. NAS came out, and they were much higher than what everybody was thinking, especially based on the condition report, and basically said, we don't use that condition report. We use our own modeling and the information from the farmer. So I do think we're getting a little too hung up on that condition report, but right now, I guess I'm kind of satisfied with 174, 175, and have to see how the thing finishes out.
Two other things. The marketplace, I believe, and you can help me out, is working both coming weather and the Ukraine-Russia war, particularly the grain corridor and whether it will be used or can be used and what that means to the marketplace. It looks almost like two weather markets operating at the same time, and they can operate against or with each other. How do you manage that from a farmer perspective, and what do you talk to them about as it relates to the volatility in this marketplace?
Well, it just seems to me that every time we get talking about something stopping the shipments out of Ukraine, the market takes a big bounce. And then 2 or 3 days later, that bounce erodes away, and we've been seeing it eroding on us here over the last couple of days. Makes me wonder just exactly how much emphasis we should be putting on that situation. We've had a year now to decide how to move grain around, supply it to different places. And in that time period, we've had Brazil come up with, you know, just record bean yields, and now it looks like record corn yields. And I think that can help offset. We know it helped offset the loss we saw in Argentina. And I think it could go a long way to offset what we have with the situation in Ukraine. Then if the U.S. can come up with something in the neighborhood of 174, we could be 2 billion bushels plus here on corn. So I just think that it's still up in the air, but if you're looking at what the charts are doing, and here's another thing that you might look at. Farmers tend to hold on to their grain until they think they've got a crop or a crop coming. And in the last couple of weeks, we've been seeing farmers selling. And I think that to me sends volumes of information. If the farmer itself is looking at selling, thinking he's got a decent crop, then maybe we all should be looking a little more at that particular bit of information.
Sherman, is that the case in your office?
Most of them are sold out. I mean, we sold stuff a long time ago, you know, for old crop, if you're talking old crop, new crop as well. There's not a lot of new crop actually getting sold. I sit on an ethanol board and we haven't really bought a lot of new crop bushels yet, for this fall. Now I've been selling, you know, for our farm, I've been selling, you know, as we go up and, but yeah, I mean, what Merrill says, farmers are rather reluctant to sell because they kind of see what kind of crop they're having going forward. But, you know, it's all going to come back to, you know, our carryout. What are we going to end up with? You know, how many bushels can we afford to lose? Or what if the crop's not as bad as, you know, as what some of these lower estimates are saying? I mean, I've seen some 173s, some 174s, you know, and like Merrill said, I mean, they don't go off crop conditions. They don't go off the ratings on their yield estimates. So, you know, I think when you talk to other guys that are farmers around the area, I mean, in Iowa and Nebraska and South Dakota, you know, North Dakota, those areas were really, really hurting last year. This year, you don't hear it as much. You don't hear it quite as bad. So I think the areas that last year, or the areas this year, I should say, that are hurt aren't as maybe as bad as the areas that were hurt last year, if that makes any sense. So maybe the production, you know, maybe it is a 177 this year. So if that's the case, you know, we probably don't need to go a lot higher, you know, with everything. You know, like Merrill said, if you look at the Ukraine situation, yes, we do get bumps from it. But in my opinion, we need to see something come our way as far as exports or some new buying come from that. And we really haven't seen that. And maybe it's too soon. Maybe we will down the road, you know. But from that particular situation, we're not seeing a lot of new buying. But now, yes, we've sold some stuff to China the last few days, and that's great for new crop. So, the demand is still there. But they just really haven't been buying a lot from us.
Chip, a couple of questions about the export market for both corn and soybeans for you. One combined question. So the trade wars, or just trade in general with China, under both the Trump and the Biden administrations have been hardline. I'm wondering how much of a problem that looks like it has been for the U.S. export market for commodities. And then did the Ukraine-Russia war, when China was taking, actually, they took a lot of the grain out of Ukraine last year, if I remember correctly, give them both the opportunity and the impetus to change their trade routes so that they really rely on Brazil more fully? And has that reconfigured the export market across the planet, leaving U.S. farmers with less rather than more of the marketplace?
Well, that's a lot to unpack there, Todd. I do think that in the case of beans, this massive Brazil crop has slowed us down a little bit, and maybe taken some market share away from us. Now we've had China back in the market the last couple of days. I don't fear bean exports and total bean demand being down as much. I don't think there's as much cushion on the balance sheet in beans, and maybe we're off just a little bit in bean exports, but our crush margins are fantastic. Our renewable diesel is surging. And I think the domestic usage, you know, probably offsets any little blip that we see on bean exports. I think the soy oil market, and you know, we can't forget about how important Ukraine is from a sunflower oil world, you know, vegetable oil provider through sunflower oil and sunflower exports. That is something the market's still trying to crunch through. I think where the problem comes is corn, and rightfully so. Even if our yield slips a little bit and supply doesn't end up being as big, we're likely maybe 300 to 400 million bushels, arguably too high on corn demand. So if yields do slip with poor weather in August on corn, we're still too high on demand, export and domestic, likely both. And so there's going to be more cushion on the corn balance sheet to sustain that. And obviously Brazil had a big second crop of corn as well that's now competing with us. So there's so many moving parts in this world grain trade right now. And wheat's going to play into that too, as we've drawn world wheat stocks down. You know, what does Ukraine get out of that country to the west through river and you know, via trucks out on roads into Western Europe? That's all a question that is going to take some time to figure out. And there's going to be a lot of moving pieces as we go forward, not only because of just the world trade in general, but this whole Russia-Ukraine situation kind of, you know, getting worse by the day, it looks like.
Merrill, I know you like to look at the charts quite a bit. Pick one of the commodities you want to talk about for sure, and tell me what you see in the charts today that gives you pause or hope, one of the two.
I guess when I look at it, the beans are definitely bullish compared to the corn. Corn went back 618. It's been falling apart. And it's just not as strong. The bean chart is looking strong, but this last week, the beans are going to give us a minor reversal on the candlestick chart. They're going to tell us that it's a inverted hammer, which is a bearish signal on the markets. You have to have follow through. So then this next week will be what we look for to see what that follow through is. I know the price is better, but we saw that reversal also in the oil. I didn't get a chance to take a look at the meal. So I'm looking for some cycle lows to come into play here for corn, looking for cycle lows to come in around mid-Sep. The beans, I don't have another cycle low really coming into the latter part of December, first part of January. So the seasonals are down. They're down into about the second week of August for both corn and beans. So we're going to need to see some bullish information, and it needs to be fairly strong bullish information to stand up against the seasonals.
I was talking with Chad Hart on Monday of this week, Sherman, and he mentioned just arbitrarily that next week is the week where corn normally, historically, would turn lower during the summer months. There's a lot of seasonal pressure, as Merrill had mentioned. How much lower downside risk do you think we have, or if at all, do we have a lot of downside risk at this point?
Yeah, I mean, there's always downside risk. I mean, yes, the seasonals are down. I understand. I mean, the charts are kind of rolling over here. We've had some down days. We couldn't get through, you know, that 200-day moving average on that December corn chart. Tried it a couple of times and failed. You know, so the market's backing off. The corn market's influenced, you know, by a lot of other things as well. But it's going to be determined, you know, a lot, like we said earlier, about Ukraine. You know, how does that escalate? Does that get worse? It does seem like it's going to get worse. But it does feel heavy. So as a farmer, as a producer, I think, you know, I've been scale up selling into this thing. I had some orders in, and I think that's what producers need to do. I think you need to have some orders, find some technical objectives, you know, place your orders. Because if the rains come, you know, now if they don't, then all bets are off. I mean, this thing can go back up, you know, if this market gets smaller. But if we end up with a 176.7 type, you know, or bigger type yield, you know, our carryout's going to be 2 billion plus. So if the wheat market can't hold up, which it seems like it struggles quite a bit, then, you know, we could go down into, you know, like we said, the end of September, first part of October, and put in some sort of harvest low. You know, so I don't feel like we need to go below that 480 again, but, you know, time will tell as far as that goes. But so, yeah, there's downside risk. There's also upside risk, I mean, as well, for guys. If this weather, you know, does not rain and we start taking bushels off this crop fairly fast, then I think, you know, we could chop this thing back, you know, back up to the upside again in that 570, 580 type area.
So I'd like to ask each of you, on the corn market and the soybean market both, are you friendly, neutral, bearish? And neutral, I guess I should define neutral as it just could go either way, and I'm not sure which way it's going to go, as opposed to I think it's going sideways, or that may be where you're at. And if you could define that for me as well. Chip, why don't you start for me?
Yeah, I think corn more neutral. I think to Sherman's point, there could be some downside here in the short run, especially if we get some more rain. There could be upside north of $6. I'm maybe a little more friendly longer term on beans because there is just no margin for error on yield this year. And if we drop a bushel and a half, 2 bushels under trend line, it is just astronomically tight on the carryout. Now, all that being said, I do think beans look a little bit toppy and they could correct 68 cents in a snap of a finger in the blink of an eye. But longer term, I'd say I'm friendly to beans, but I do think there's an opportunity here, $14 and above, to scale into some sales, probably more neutral corn. And, you know, the take home to me in corn is, yeah, be a scale up seller. If you have high crop insurance guarantees and high coverage levels, don't forget we're under the spring crop insurance guarantee, and you're opening yourself up to a little bit of risk if you do make sales below those levels. So your crop insurance is a good put right now to allow you a little bit of time to see how this thing plays out.
Currently, short-term bearish into harvest, which I guess that's almost a no-brainer most years. This one's a little bit less, I have a little bit less confidence in the bearish. I think longer term, I want to be a little more bullish. And I look at the situation, even if we have a 174 crop, which is like the fifth largest yield we've had, and I think it's about the same for the production. We still, if the demand is right, if the wheat doesn't come around like it's supposed to in some of these other countries, I think we still have a situation where things are tight. They're not expanding as much as they normally do per year. And I think that could keep prices well supported. So I'm not looking for as low of prices as we've seen in the past. The weather could change that. But longer term, I think we've got some pretty nice situation for rallies, mostly in the beans. As Chip said, it's pretty tight. And if we lose a bushel or two, it could be even tighter. Right now, I think if everything would work out right, I don't think the beans will go as high as many are thinking. And I mean right by our window of time for exports has been narrowed by the fact that we have a larger crop in Brazil. And the other thing is, will Argentina have 3 years in a row of drought? It's not likely. So if Argentina then comes through with a crop and Brazil comes through a crop too, it will really shorten our window of marketing for soybeans. So the bullish, if it's bullish next year for beans, that would be mainly a U.S. bullish situation instead of a world.
Beans, I'm still fairly friendly because just from the standpoint of the yield, I mean, you know, 52 is a pretty lofty level. And so that's still yet to be determined, right? I mean, we've still got weather in August. I mean, we've seen several years in a row that we've lost, you know, some bushels because of the weather hasn't cooperated in August. And I think, you know, like Chip said, the demand for bean oil is really high. The demand for meal seems to be, you know, pretty stout as well, just as much from the shortfall from Argentina as anything else. But, you know, so the bean side to me could be, you know, a little bit more explosive at times. But with that said, you know, I sold some new crop beans this morning. I sold the board. I sold some cash. The market was getting a little bit overdone. I think you've got to take some of this as a producer and lock it down, especially if you haven't, you know, don't have a lot of sales made on the books. So I guess I'm fairly friendly to the bean market just based off of yield. Corn, I'm more neutral. It seems to struggle. I mean, we made those highs early on, and we just can't seem to get back up there convincingly, you know, unless this wheat market would go a lot higher. And that's going to be, in my opinion, based off, you know, some more of the situation in Ukraine. If things get worse over there, which, you know, I think if wheat would go up some more, you know, we could get this corn market to be drug up with it as well, until we see more about what the yield is on the corn side of it. But, you know, unless we can cut a lot of yield off of this and get this carry out down, you know, well below 2 billion, which doesn't seem to be the case at the moment, you know, the corn market seems to be kind of stuck.
I'm going to ask one final question. Usually this is your final word. You can do that. However, I'm fearful that I could be a little bit biased because of my own experience and driving around Illinois and being in cornfields at this time of year. If the month of August is normal, which is relatively dry and warm, but still has some rainfall, am I personally asking you questions that are looking at too large of a corn crop? Sherman?
Oh, we're looking at too large of a corn crop the way things look at the moment?
Am I biasing the show is what I want to know. And I'll leave this in. I just want to know.
I don't know. I mean, the corn crop's going to be, I mean, we got a lot more acres, right? You know, like I said, we're going
right.
to be looking at.
Yeah, between acres and yield.
Yeah,
yes.
So we're looking at your final production number, your carryout number. That's what really matters. You know, and is the crop too large? Probably, in my opinion, still probably going to be too large going forward, because it's just the demand seems to be slowing down. And our exports have been too high, you know, from the USDA. We're not going to meet those. We're probably looking at too large of a crop.
Chip?
I think that we're probably looking at too large of a crop, but I think when you're talking about the corn market, it's all about what happens to beans. If we're topping out here in this 14 and a quarter range, and that's the high in beans, and I'm not real confident of that just yet, if that's the case, then we're going to be struggling here and probably have to spend some time, you know, under $5 again. If beans are still on their way to $15 or higher, and soy oil leads the way, then corn's going to be drug higher than it might normally have been, even with a 2.2, 2.3 billion bushel carryout. So I think to some regards, it's not only about corn yields, it's what do beans do from this level, and there's just so many moving parts to this. I think it's more important than ever for producers to have a plan and you know, execute on that, have offers, have a written plan, and know what you're going to do when the market does whatever it's going to do, because I can't remember. I know these guys too have been doing this a long time, just like I have. These are extremely crazy markets, unpredictable, huge volatility, gives you opportunities, but boy, it is difficult to maneuver in without a plan.
And finally, Merrill, have I biased, is my own bias that this is a big corn crop been too bearish in our conversation today, is really the question I've been asking.
I guess I would say I don't think so. I think we could have a big crop, but it doesn't matter how big the crop is, it matters how much demand we have. You know, if you have the demand, the appetite to eat that crop up, you know, it doesn't really matter. And so that's, I think, the question here. And right now, we don't have the demand. So almost any size carryover is too much. If we don't start picking up more demand for soybeans, we could end up even at what they're predicting now for carryout, we could end up with, quote unquote, too much in the beans. And the other thing we got to kind of watch, I think we've got away from it because the stock market has done rather well, is looking at this economy and what it's going to do down the road. You know, have we had a soft landing? Is the recession over? That's what some people are starting to talk now. Today, we've got the dollar up almost 900 points. The stock market's down 227, and they're hammering gold and silver. you look at Mr. Copper, who's supposed to talk to you about inflation and talk about economy, and it's middle range, not telling you a whole lot of anything about which way it wants to go. So I think there's a lot of questions about this economy that could still affect the prices that we're looking at. And I think Sherman's done a good job of saying that we need to be doing some pricing here. So let's chip. And I think that's something key that we should take away from this is, you know, just because we may have a big crop or we may have a short crop, there's a lot of risk out there and it needs to be handled.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Our thanks go to our panelists today. They include Merrill Crowley of AgTraderTalk.com, Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri Marketing, and Sherman Newland from Risk Management Commodities. You can always find this program online again at WILLAG.org or search it out by name in your favorite podcast application. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.